The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Want to listen to a pod in the afternoon and you got nothing to do, turn on MFF and Shark Dropper and we'll give you something to do. Yeah!
Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. That was our, I guess, our new theme song. I don't know I don't know what to call that.
It's a work in progress.
Right. I'm your host, John Losvov, and joining me is John Lovingood.
What's up, folks?
And apparently, he also moonlights as a singer. Mark Hoffmeyer.
Mark, Axel, Rose, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and the two guys from that band that they always argue about. What's that band? There's like a Van Halen. Van Hagar. Van Halen.
Yeah, Van Halen, not Van Hagar.
Yeah.
That was like Wayne and Garth.
Yeah, if you blended both of them together, that's my style of music.
Right. So, guys, what's up? What have you guys been up to?
Mostly just lifting heavy things and putting them down.
Right. For those of you who don't know, Lovingood is kind of a gym rat, to put it mildly, actually.
I just really want to look like one of those action stars.
The Rock?
Oh, dude, that'd be awesome.
Right. Actually, I just did a bunch of Pilates. No lie.
Oh, so you want to look like
John Travolta in 10.
Yes. No, Timothy Oliphant, man. I want to be Oliphant chic. I want to be just like a skinny, lean foot person.
Yeah. I think he just does sit-ups and eats lettuce.
He goes to Subway.
I want to look like his bigger cousin that doesn't have the self-control that he has.
Oliphant's a pretty svelte dude. If you can pull that off, I'd be pretty impressed.
Like, if you turn like a mongoose into a human, you'd get him. You get Oliphant.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard Tim the Oliphant described as a mongoose.
A mongoose. He's like an anthropomorphized mongoose. It's probably a spirit animal.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Like, I picture him being like Ricky Tikki Tavi and taking out a snake.
Like taking out cobras and asps.
Well, if you think about it, I love Justified, but I can't think of his nemesis.
That dude.
A snake. Oh, a snake is his nemesis, right?
I watched that show. I've watched every episode, and I'm just drawing a blank right now. I can't believe I don't remember his name.
Well, you're obviously
Boyd. He's like a snake.
Yeah. Snake versus mongoose.
I think Elmore Leonard wrote those books in the past, knowing that those two would be cast when they were kids, of course.
Elmore Leonard.
So I could pull off that fable.
Wow. We're breaking new ground here in Movies, Films, and Flicks.
We are degenerating much earlier in the podcast than normal.
when you want breaking news and you don't know where to go, listen to the pod, and there you go.
Just so people understand, we are recording this at like not even 8 p.m. on a Thursday, not midnight on a Saturday, so we're all sober when he's singing like this.
He gets better when he gets drunk, trust me.
I just get tired, guys. I would lose my attention span after 20 minutes.
All right.
I mean, I think I sing awesome when I'm drunk. I just start thinking that I'm Tom Cruise or something. I can pull off anything, just a la some, not School of Rock. I can't even think right now.
No, Rock of Ages.
Rock of Ages, yeah. It's like, you give me a karaoke, I'll think I'm Toby Keith.
Red Solo Cup.
I'll just be belting stuff so loud, and sometimes it's a little too loud. Like, you know when you sing in the shower, you think you sound great?
I've never sung in the shower.
You've never sang in the shower?
No, I'll sing in my car, I'll sing in the house, but I don't think I've ever belted it. I've never sang in the shower.
Okay, I just had a good idea for a future podcast. We won't do it today. It's going to be best singing in the shower scenes. I think Nightmare on Elm Street even had a singing in the shower scene. We got to have best singing in the shower scenes.
You just want to research people in the shower.
Dude, think about 80s teen movies. Like, you know, you got the kid, like, he's, like, washing his armpits in the shower, and he's singing, like, da, da, da! He's just singing, like, top of his lungs, Guns N' Roses
Wait,
or something.
What movie is this?
Where he goes, da, da, da! This happened in multiple movies. It might have even happened in The Goonies. I don't know.
This brings up an interesting thing. I think most shower acting involves the actors cleaning their pits. Like, I think that's their go-to.
Well,
like,
I mean,
it's like, what's my motivation? Very rarely do you see somebody doing, like, the backwash, or, you know, like you don't see them doing any of that. Like they're I never see them conditioning in their hair, only shampooing.
Well, and sometimes then they clean shampoo, their pits.
Yeah, never conditioner.
It's just shampoo.
Yeah.
I think we should do that for a future podcast. We'll get like really in depth. But anyway, so let me try to take control of this podcast. And let's start off with reader questions here.
Yeah, this has really gotten away from us so far.
Yeah, I'm bringing it back. I'm taking it out of the shower and bringing it back. So reader at a hard place ask, who wins in a fight? The Rock from The Rundown or The Rock from Walking Tall?
Hold on, tap on the brakes there. Can we just back up to what that reader's name was?
A hard place. Oh, I get it.
That's terrible. That's terrible. I don't know if that's a real reader's name. That sounds staged.
And if it is, I want to buy a drummer just to stand behind him for a day and just, you know, pat him on the back and play boom. Well, okay. I got to go with Rundown. That movie's more – now, I feel like Walking Tall exists more in the real world, but the Rundown has this really cheeky, cartoony vibe where The Rock is virtually indestructible. I think if The Rock from Walking Tall had a baboon on his shoulder, I would go for Walking Tall. But I'm going to say The Rock from The Rundown. He can take a lot of punishment. I'll go with him.
Hands down. Hands down. I mean, he was really like, he was what I'll call everyman badass in Walking Tall. You know, he was the guy you don't mess with. He's like the one friend we all have that you don't mess with. But he didn't necessarily come off as you know, Bruce Lee. He just, whereas in The Rundown, everything was perfect. There was no like real bar fighting. Even the fight in the bar with the football players in the opening scene where he takes out the whole offensive line of some team. Like even that, everything seems a little too perfect. He doesn't take enough hits from these big guys. Whereas Walking Tall, you know, he's just grinding out those fights.
Yeah.
I mean, when he hits them, it looks like it's hurting his fist. When he hits 89 people in the Rundown, there's probably not even a little scuff on his fist.
Now, this is more of an important question, but who would win? Johnny Knoxville from Walking Tall, who's very scrappy. He has the jackass Kentucky strength versus Sean William Scott from the Rundown.
Oh,
Sean William Scott. Got to be Sean William Scott. Because he's going to bring – he's got all the fancy moves, and he's got the attitude, whereas Johnny Knoxville is just kind of crazy.
See, I'm going to go with Sean William Scott this one because I know that The Rock from The Rundown is hot on Sean William Scott's heels. So he's just going to beat up Johnny Knoxville to get to Sean William Scott.
You had a pause there. You were just saying that The Rock was hot on Sean William Scott.
Yeah, that's what that's
it sounded like a rhyme about a bro crush.
I think that's what that movie was about. It was.
Guys, I'm going controversial, and I am going Johnny Knoxville. I think now if they fought in an open field, I would give it to Sean William Scott. But if they were in a barn, I think Johnny Knoxville would find a brick or a shovel or something, and he would win that fight by sheer just – he has cardio for days, so I'm going Knoxville.
Okay, but who wins if they fought in IKEA?
Probably still Johnny Knoxville then.
Yeah, Johnny Knoxville. Know.
He's got the X factor. He'll pull out a drawer from one of those dressers and just go to town on you. He'll wave around two drawers and swing them like he'll make a whirlwind like Bruce Lee with nunchucks.
Exactly. Knoxville with prompts. I give him the win.
He does seem zany. He also seems like more of a scrapper. Like when you guys get down on the ground and you've got him in a leg lock, he's going to bite your ankle. Whereas Sean William Scott is going to try and arm lever off your leg, you know?
I don't know. Sean William Scott from Rundown, he had a knack for getting away. I feel like IKEA gives you a lot of escape opportunities, right?
No, they're committed to fight. There's something at stake. I don't know what it is. They get to marry Jessica Alba. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's worth fighting for. All right, so basically we agree. The Rock from The Rundown would beat The Rock from Walking Tall. Consensus agreement.
Oh, yeah.
I think that The Rock from The Rundown would beat five The Rocks from Walking Tall.
Wow.
Me too. Yeah, I do too.
He just did too much too well in that movie. And the thing is that they did such a fun job with that movie too, right? Like, I was rolling my eyes, but I was too busy loving it to be bothered. Like, it was wonderful. It was like The Marine. He's doing everything perfect, and you're rolling your eyes, but the movie's so fun that you just don't get upset at the silliness.
Oh, hey, also, for all the listeners out there, speaking of The Marine, our Gonzo buddy Vijay and I did a Marine introspective where we talked about all three of the Marine films. So go to www.moviesfilmsandflicks.com and check out the Marine introspective.
Awesome. All right. Reader question number two. Reader at Dan Aykroyd's Letter Pants ask, do you think Exit to Eden? Do you think Exit to Eden? That's just a bad image, right? Like, I'm just imagining like taking him off like a hard day of hard days of work.
Like, just like to get in him.
I don't know.
Anyway. I don't even know how Danny DeVito. Dan Aykroyd. Talking about? I'm getting lost. I'm not even.
Dan Aykroyd. I know Danny DeVito is just as disturbing of an image.
I was thinking of getting into Danny DeVito's pants and like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That little troll, like.
All right.
I'm sorry, but I think there was a question buried in there before I lost it.
Right. So, it asks, do you think Exit to Eden is a sequel to 50 Shades of Grey?
I think that Exit to Eden. No, hold on now. I've actually seen this movie more than once. Have you guys seen this movie, Exit to Eden?
I mean, I haven't saw it since I ordered it on Columbia VHS tape sales when I first signed up for it.
15 years ago?
Yeah, I remember the scene with the butter and the croissants, and then I remember Rosie O'Donnell sauntering around in that getup.
I think it's on my Netflix queue somewhere down there. I don't know. I haven't bothered.
Honestly, you know, I'm going to be a little mean here, and I'm going to say that I think that, in a way, that Exit to Eden, if you take out most of the comedy, because it was really a comedy above all, if you take out all the comedy, Exit to Eden is exactly what 50 Shades of Grey wishes that it was.
So I'm going to posit a theory here. Mr. Gray and Annabelle Steele, is that her name? I don't know her name.
Yeah, that's her name, Annabelle Steele. Christian Gray.
No, it's Anastasia Steele.
Oh, Anastasia. Right? Anastasia Steele.
Oh, Anastasia. All right, so
why do I know that? I haven't read the book or never watched the movie, but I know that. Like, it just.
So let's fast forward 30 years from the third book. I haven't read any of them, but I know there's three books. They just want to get away. They have billions of dollars. They want their own island. They're tired of the life. So they start this island.
Spoiler alert.
They want to relax. Yeah. Like, so do you think it could be, do you think they own this island and Exit to Eden?
Oh, is that, that's what the nature of the question was. Okay. I didn't even understand that.
Yeah.
Do they own this island? If they do, they've clearly outsourced it to management and are totally hands off because I see none of their lame bondage elements from 50 Shades and Exit to Eden. Exit to Eden did better with tongue in cheek and a lot of laughs at showing bondage culture than I think 50 Shades of Grey did.
So if they did really own it and they were like hands-on owners like Mark Cuban on the Dallas Mavericks, it would just be like a bunch of really glum, morose, self-serious people walking around sullenly.
Yeah, it would be no good. Just wouldn't work. Because, so there's a scene where Rosie O'Donnell has, you know, her assigned manservant, submissive slave, whatever he is, right? And she's all in her little studded leather getup, and they're out for a walk. And he says, how can I fulfill your fantasy? She says, go paint my house. And it was really funny at the time because she had wanted something to do with this. But if this was like Christian Grey saying, go paint my house, he would expect you to get down on all fours, walk over and get the paint and start painting the house like you meant business. And it was, I don't know. It was too serious. Not that I don't think that subculture is serious. I don't know. I just didn't buy it.
Are you talking about the S&M subculture? Are you talking about the Exit to Eden fan?
Well, just the whole bondage, you know, dominant, submissive kind of alternative lifestyle, I'll call it. I don't know.
So we're going to say no, that we don't think that it's a sequel.
No, definitely not a sequel. And by the way, guys, if you're about to get dragged to see 50 Shades of Grey, just suggest that the theater's going to be too busy that day and rent Exit to Eden. You'll get some laughs out of it. No one's going to be disappointed.
Levengood, it sounds like you were recently dragged to see 50 Shades of Grey.
I wasn't dragged. I was being a good boyfriend, not like for points, but no, you know, the girl obviously chose the movie, and
you guys are a team. You're a duo. You know, you want to watch something, she goes with you. You make compromises. You're a team.
That's just it. And it didn't even feel like a compromise. I mean, I was interested to. I'm interested to see everything. It's just that it would have been much lower on my list. I wouldn't have necessarily gone to the theater. But she looks at me with those eyes and that smile, like, "Are we going to go see 50 Shades of Grey Valentine's Day weekend?" And she kind of tucks her head into her shoulders a little bit and tilts her head with that smile, and you just crumble. Like, unless you're a total dick of a bro, you're going to say yes and you're going to be happy to go. You know, you'll get snuggles afterwards and during. It's worth it.
So you were dragged there.
I really I'm not gonna go on record, and plus she's probably gonna hear this, but she knows I know, and
hi John's girlfriend,
listeners will believe it. Like, no, it's I didn't get dragged. I kind of regretted the movie though.
No, you guys are a team, you do stuff together, you're interested. Now John,
definitely, yeah.
John, in the past John has done a bros guide to film. And you've covered what, Blue Crush 2? That I said, didn't I send you Blue Crush 2? What was that gag I did?
You ambushed me. So what had happened was we were just joking around about how you really wanted me to do Blue Crush 2 because I think Soul Surfer just came out or something, and we were just joking on Facebook, and you kept snarkily joking about it in text, and then before I knew it, 4 days passed, and I got something from Amazon when I hadn't ordered anything from Amazon, and it had a little note. Like, said something. There was a cute little note that you wrote. I don't remember what it said, but it was for me. You bought it for me for $5, and it's like, okay, now I actually have to watch and review this teenage dream drivel.
So from there started the bros. Wait, is it the Certified Bros Guide?
It was a Certified Bros Perspective on Blue Crush 2, and then later I did a Certified Bros Perspective on Beautiful Creatures.
I love that movie.
Beautiful Creatures?
Yeah. I enjoy it.
I mean, right, I enjoyed making fun of it. That's about it.
All right. So, John, let's give us your Cliff Notes bros guide. Like, not a total bro. You're not like the bro that – you're not like the woo girl bro. You're like a
– Wait, what's a woo like, girl bro?
Who is the woo girl bro? Is there an example of that?
Well, like, you know, Woo Girls on How I Met Your Mother, they kind of wear like those fake cowboy hats and they go to bars and they go, woo, shots.
Right.
So like, I picture like you have one of those rings around your neck that glow in the dark. You have a tank top, and then you're in the club pumping one arm, right, like this. And then you got a vodka Red Bull in the other.
So I'm Jersey Shore in it is basically where like, I'm like
GTL.
Like, I'm like a situation Sorrentino kind of thing here.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a little less, you're a little savvy, pale though. Side.
But less savvy. He seemed to have a mind for business. You're more of like a.
I'm less savvy than him.
Well, who's got more
I'm
money?
Not talking about you. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about
I got you.
You know, you're kind of bro, not you.
I mean,
you're gonna hang up tonight and be like, Mark said I wasn't as savvy as the situation.
That's right. Well, you'll get an angry phone call after this is done. Either that or a viciously phrased text message.
But very well thought out. Like 2 hours later, I get it.
Oh yeah, like harsh rhetoric. You're gonna read it in the middle of the night.
Mark, you should reply back with a picture of the situation. Like with his hands up, like hey.
So you want me to describe the bro that I'm channeling when
you got the post coming out tomorrow, so we'll let people read it, or you know, when you do read it. So let's just hear some Cliff Notes.
Okay, let's. All right. Well, first off, the point of view is all right, got, folks. I'm 34 years old. I'm a Jersey Italian, and this film made me roll my eyes so much I was damn near getting dizzy from it. You know, I don't want all this cute, warm, fuzzy kissing stuff all the time. I want bench pressing and Jean-Claude Van Damme and big biceps and big guns and high-fiving and shit.
None of those were in 50 Shades of Grey, Levengood?
No, those were not any of the Shades of Grey.
Well,
they were none of the Shades of Grey.
I was severely misinformed about this movie, then.
I was getting shades of Rainbow Bright is what I was getting. This movie was was more like for the people who grew up watching Hannah Montana, I think. It just, I didn't read the book, but I don't know. I got very little satisfaction out of it other than kind of enjoying being able to embrace a movie that I don't like, you know. But so here's the story from someone who didn't read the book, from your bro. It's you've got this girl. She lives in a big city. She's in Seattle, right? But she's in her 20s and she's a virgin. And she meets Mr. Christian Grey when she's going to give him this interview. And he's so intense. And she's so taken by him. And he's so powerful. And he's clean shaven. He has his nice, handsome, svelte suit. And sure enough, you know, the intensity turns up and he takes an interest in her and she's so cute and meek. He takes her in a helicopter for a first date. It's so stupid, cliche, and sweeps her off her feet like a Disney prince. And before you know it, he's trying to kind of talk her into being his submissive and living in his McMansion condo. And he shows her his playroom, which is like the dungeon, just, you know, not as creepy. It's pretty clean. And the idea is throughout the movie, you see her emotional wrestling match of liking him and wanting to be with him because she's so, I guess, taken by him and swept off her feet, and him kind of succumbing to his softer side and not just being a dominant and kind of giving a little when he's never given before. And that's the real gist of it. And while I may have started to describe this like a rational, wholehearted human being, it was just all done so poorly. I laughed so much at this movie. So every little aspect of this movie was unrealistic.
Were you the only one laughing, or is there like just a lot of people laughing?
Okay, in all fairness, like I'm giggling and I'm intentionally not being loud because I don't want to embarrass the girl that I'm with, my girlfriend, but she admitted that she was rolling her eyes a lot. And later, just so I knew that she wasn't, you know, trying to console me, she's quoting things that a bro would quote. Like, I couldn't believe how he was so intense when he was saying, I like to educate, or I like to exercise control in all aspects of life. When she just asked him if he was a control freak, he just leans forward and says that to her.
Hey, do you want some waffles?
No, I like to do whatever quote you just said.
It's like, hey, do you want some more butter with your waffles? No, I have exactly as much butter as I want. Oh, you're a little bit of a control freak? I exercise control in every aspect of my waffles. Like, he was just, it was too much.
Actually, I need some butter.
Is that your Christian Grey voice that we get to enjoy for a little while?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I'm the one in charge here.
It sounds strangely like Danny DeVito.
This is the way it's gonna be.
So I don't know. This movie, I mean, not since those lovesick, glittery vampires, you know, from that Twilight series that never seemed to end, have I been so unmoved by two young adults yearning to be together.
Well, strangely enough, the novel Fifty Shades of Grey started out as Twilight fan fiction. So you shouldn't be too surprised to hear it's equally as horrible as Twilight.
I think I just threw up a little in my mouth. I really didn't know that.
Yeah.
It was. It started off as that. But I mean, it made $240 million. So, but you know what's funny? I was reading about the post and the two actors did not like each other. I know this is a lot of hearsay, but they said they had no chemistry on screen. Nope. And now they have two more movies left to be together. So I wonder if she signed on Dakota Johnson because she thought Charlie Hunnam was going to do it. Then Charlie Hunnam backed out and then she got stuck with the guy from The Fall. Which he plays a serial killer and he's pretty good, Jamie Dornan.
I think they should replace both of these actors.
This Dakota Johnson, was it her first big movie role?
Well, she was fun. Yeah, first big one, but she was funny in 21 Jump Street. She actually had a personality in that. I haven't seen her. She was in Need for Speed. That's underrated.
She had no personality in this. No personality at all in this.
So it was just like I think if you had to do a poster for it, I think your quote would just be like, it was all done so poorly.
Well, was it her acting ability, or was it just like the content she was given?
Well, you know, it's like it's easy to blame an actor sometimes when everything around them has fallen apart. I'm not necessarily going to blame the actors for anything except for them not wrestling to change the script more, because it was really the dialogue itself that was so crippling to their characters and their development.
I heard the director and the writer had a bunch of rows on set. So they had to change a lot of stuff. And the source material from the books was really bad. I don't know, everyone's talking about how the books are really bad. So, I mean, the dialogue probably wasn't that good.
Yeah,
it all just got kind of watered down.
It was really, really, there was too much exposition. They're explaining everything. It's like the No Student Left Behind program, except for an adult movie. And so you take this really mature content and you dumb it down like you're explaining it to a four-year-old almost. And even the things that are supposed to be subtle, again, you know, she's interviewing him. When she first comes to like him, she's interviewing him because he's going to be the speaker as a young, successful businessman for her college graduation. And she's asking him these questions, and she asks him what he likes to do outside of work for fun. And he just looks at her dead set, like he was about to get ambushed on To Catch a Predator or something, with these eyes of his. And he says, I enjoy testing physical limits. Like, with a straight face. That was what he said. He didn't say, you know, with kind of lighthearted, well, I enjoy a lot of it, you know, extreme activities or something, as if he was into maybe sports or something. He just said that, and he's staring at this girl while he's saying it. It's so deliberately provocative. But again, it's like they want to make sure that even if you sneezed while he was talking, while you were watching the movie, that you know exactly what's happening. It's so simplified that it's like Dora the Explorer explaining a bondage culture.
All right.
Look, this is bondage, you know, and she's just going to explain every little bit. It's too much.
I think you just ruined Dora the Explorer for a large percentage of our listeners.
Like, I mean, because at one point he even explains a little bit about what I would have just called like a little coach whip kind of thing, I guess, or like a riding crop that you would use to whip a horse's like hind thigh kind of thing. And he's explaining this to her. He calls it a flogger. He asks her if she wants to give it a name. He explains what you do with it. It's too much.
Right. That actually kind of brings up my next point. You know, we've established that the dialogue and the acting is bad. But how were the sex scenes in general? Because wasn't a large portion of this movie just sex scenes?
So I really wouldn't say that. I mean, there were several sex scenes. But they were – like one of the times – that like she's wearing this nice clean white robe and they're in his marble palace of an oversized vaulted ceiling bathroom. And they slip in the bathtub like it was one of those Showtime softcore porns. Like it was supposed to be romantic, like you could watch it with your wife. Like it was this sensual thing, and he sponge bathes her and they kiss so gently. And he says how he'll be devoted to her. So it's like there's no real intensity, and you never really feel the tension from her resistance to the bondage in the sex scenes much, like except for when they really just push it, and I don't know, it gets melodramatic. This movie didn't work, guys, and I don't think it was just me, and I've heard that a lot of other people have been disappointed with it. However, if you go on Amazon, you'll see these people who must have been paid to write these reviews, I think, who make it seem so serious and steamy, and there's so much chemistry on screen. Like, it's probably the mother-in-law of the writer.
Oh.
Like, you know, or the grandmother. You know, like my son is such a good writer, the steaminess. I don't know why she's Jewish. She's Jewish, evidently. The steaminess is so much chemistry, it reminds me of when I met my Morton. You know, it's like there's but there was none of that. You know, the only chemistry was like slowly watching an ice cube shift from frozen to liquid state. Like, it was just so dull.
So, Levigan, I take it you're not really looking forward to the sequel, then? Am I correct?
I think it's a good safe bet that I will not be asked to go see part two, and that if I see part two, it'll be well after it's in theaters.
Okay.
And I'm saying that given that I would crumble to whatever movie that my girl wanted to watch.
So you think, because the first movie did really well at the box office, you think the the sequels will do terrible?
Well, it'll drop off. So this one had a big opening weekend. A lot of people experimented with it and are realizing it's not that good. So the sequel is just going to be for the diehard fans.
Yeah, I too was experimenting.
I don't know. I like Die Hard. I don't really want to see this movie. Ayo!
Where's John McClane? Get John McClane in here.
So, but again, like this movie, like I thought that that I might learn something about bondage or some of the things that they do or some of the ways that the dynamic works. I thought that I might learn something. Well, I learned nothing. Exit to Eden taught me everything and more than this movie.
I actually
into a movie about like chess playing, you want to learn about chess. You know what I mean? So you went into this film and you're like, oh, maybe I can learn a little bit more about this world.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I thought that it was going to make for an interesting night after the movie, to be honest.
Actually, now I'm thinking something, John. You just said Bruce Willis. Now imagine in the second one, they walk into a room and Bruce Willis is there and he's like, welcome to the party, pal.
But no, Christian Grey walks into his home and he sees his maid dead in an office chair and it says, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. And he's just like, what is this? And then John McClane, brrr, and his bare
shoot
feet.
Shoot the glass.
So now that we've switched over to action films, you guys want
to jump into the post
that came out today?
Hold on. Before we switch over to action films, I wanted to bring up a quick question. Did you guys ever see, because we're talking about 50 Shades and it's a terrible movie, but I didn't see it. I'm not going to see it anytime soon. But I did see a movie with similar type of themes called Secretary with James Spader
and Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. Like, I was expecting 50 Shades to be somewhat similar to Secretary, maybe not as good. I enjoyed Secretary.
You would learn more about bondage from watching Secretary than 50 Shades of Grey as well. Hey, in fact, you would learn more driving by an adult toy store and just looking in the window as you drive by without stopping. You would learn more about bondage from doing that than watching 50 Shades of Grey.
Wow.
That's going to be the poster.
The poster will be almost as good as driving by your local skeezy adult toy store.
Yeah, the reason why I brought up Secretary is because it's pretty much the antithesis of 50 Shades from what it sounds like. Living Good. It has great acting, has a decent story, and there was really great chemistry between Spader and Gyllenhaal.
It's made from smart people made it. It's like if 50 Shades of Grey was made by intelligent people.
Right. So those of you listening at home, if you were disappointed by 50 Shades, I definitely recommend checking out Secretary if you haven't seen it. It's an excellent movie if you're into that type of stuff. All right. Yeah. So just go see Secretary.
Absolutely. I mean, you're going to learn way more about sex and bondage from Secretary than you ever could from 50 Shades of Grey. In fact, just driving by your local adult like sex toy store, just drive right by. Don't even tap on the brakes. You're looking through the window. You're going to learn more about bondage from that experience than sitting through 50 Shades of Grey.
Hey, y'all. It's Mark. And for you, the listeners of Movies, Films, and Flicks, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, there's a book that I really recommend to you guys. And since we've been talking about horror films tonight, it's a book called Shock Value, How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror. It's a wonderful book. It's about 9 hours long, but it walks you through how Alien, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, how the classics were made, Rosemary's Baby. And if you're a fan of horror, if you're a cinephile, and if you're just a fan of classic cinema, I totally recommend Shock Value. It's a wonderful book by Jason Zinnemann. Totally recommend it. So, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook. All right, so they made an attempt to make this movie, and it failed. So, this kind of leads into a nice little segue about when saving the day goes wrong. It's a little post I put up on the website today. And I kind of talk about Jack Burton, Ash, Han Solo, MacGruber, and when heroes try to save the day and they fail spectacularly.
Now, for those of you who want to follow along at home, the article is up on the website, moviesfilmsandflicks.com.
So the first one on the list here is
Matthew McConaughey in Reign of Fire. And I dubbed this scene McNugget. Now, the dragon is a real jerk. They're trying to fight the dragon. And Matthew McConaughey is running interference. So he climbs to the top of a tower. He grabs an axe and he jumps off the tower about 50 feet. He's yelling. He's screaming. He has his axe ready to strike. But then the dragon sees him instantly. So you think he might kill this dragon, but he's more of just a quick snack in the dragon's way. And like, you know, like, I love it. I you think that whatever is in his way will not be all right, all right, all right. And and he just gets eaten. So this whole movie, he's beating everybody up. He is the alpha male. And then he jumps off of a cliff and gets eaten immediately. Like, that's not something you see every day in cinema. So that's why it was on the top of my list.
No, I haven't seen this movie in a while, but I do remember loosely that scene. And I remember just thinking, what does he think he's going to accomplish? This dragon, it's like, it was 80 feet long or something with that long sweeping tail. It's coming right at him, basically. Like, did he think that we're the tanks and a whole team of their like skydiving archangels and all their automatic weapons failed, that a swing, one jumping swing of an axe, that was going to be the great equalizer right there? He was going to take the dragon out.
You would have been an even better moment if the dragon was just cheeky and he just let the Matthew McConaughey jump and then just fall.
And he just watches him. But wait, not like, let's wind back though. In this scene, did the dragon not know about him? Because, I mean, the dragon was kind of obviously coming his way because he knew that. And then he made the leap, which was one hell of a wire assisted leap or blue screen leap, because no one could jump that far.
That's 30 feet right there.
That was an Olympian jump from a standstill. So
with a 50-pound axe.
With a 50-pound. So, but the dragon saw him coming. I mean, but even if the dragon didn't see him coming, how would that make a difference in his ability to suddenly kill a dragon with one swing? It's like he thought he was Gimli from Lord of the Rings. Like, he was really effective with that axe.
And yeah, my axe.
Yeah, you have my axe. Yeah, I don't know. This is all forms of a bad attack. It was a terrible idea.
I just want to point out that McConaughey got really ripped for this movie.
He was a monster.
Yeah. It just makes it all the more hilarious that he just gets eaten. So abruptly. Yeah,
you don't see this much in cinema. And the next one, all right. So at least McConaughey was trying to make a distraction for Christian Bale, who was in this movie, to kill the dragon. But in the next one, in Jason Takes Manhattan, I call it a puncher's chance. Now, John, you're the horror leviathan who rides on a surfboard while watching a portable DVD player playing which movie?
I don't know, man. Hellraiser 2.
Yeah, Hellraiser 2. So I put this in here, but tell us about this stand that this boxer puts on against Jason.
Okay, so it's Jason Takes Manhattan, and at this point he's reached Manhattan from this cruise line that they were on, and this boxer, this tough dude, he starts just boxing the shit out of Jason. And the thing is that unlike any time anyone attacks Jason, it actually seems like it's working. You know, it's like when Ali is about to take down Foreman, but you know there's going to be like five or six more punches. That's what you were feeling. And then though, Jason just keeps taking it, even though he's looking slow and wobbly. The puncher's arms are clearly getting tired, and then he just gives up, and he drops his arms, and he says, "Take your best shot." And Jason just punches his head right off his shoulders. It lands in someone's car, one of the other survivors who's going to die later. It was a beautiful scene. Beautiful. It was the only time anyone got multiple hits on Jason, I think.
And yeah, it pops into a trash can, but it's like, I mean, it breaks all known laws of skin, nerves, bone, veins, arteries. I mean, the head just goes and flies down and then lands in the trash can. And I mean, you know, the guy's form was good. His punches were good, but he was punching a guy with a hockey mask. And I mean, he couldn't run, I guess. In every Jason movie, if you run, you die. So at least he took a chance, but he did drop his hands.
Jason can walk faster than anybody can run. Fact.
And then, yeah. So, John, any thoughts about the punch from Narnia?
I don't know. I feel like if they went another round, he would, you know, maybe
another round.
Yeah.
Well, like he was going to rope a dope Jason or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like, you know, he might have taken the wrong approach. He should have been a little bit more patient. I'm just like, you know, Just wait till the next round. See what.
Yeah, he punched himself out. This isn't a Rocky movie, but I do like that. It's not a Rocky movie. This boxer got tired. I mean, it worked until he got his head punched off. All right, so our next one is, so the AVP movies are absolute garbage, and they're terrible. But there's this scene in there that my buddy and I used to watch and laugh so hard at, and it involves Lance Hendrickson attempting to do the right thing but failing spectacular. So this predator's hunting him down. There's three people left alive, and Lance is like, "I'll stay behind. I'll save the day." And the predator grabs Lance, finds out that he has lung cancer, and then he just lets Lance go. And the predator walks past him, and Lance takes this fireball and he shoots it at the predator, and he's like, "Don't turn your back on me." And he lights the predator on fire. But the predator just turns around, pats the fire out a little bit, walks up to Lance and guts him through the chest, and then has him roll down the stairs. It is the most futile attack I've ever seen in my life. And he had this big moment, "Don't turn your back on me." And then he just burps out this flame. The predator acts mildly annoyed and he dies. It is the most unnecessary action scene, but it's just hilarious in how he tried to save the day, and it's the worst ever saving the day attempt ever.
See, if I was in Lance's situation, I wouldn't want the predator to turn his back on me. I'm like, well, you just keep on walking. I'm just going to, you know. I mean, the predator can turn invisible. He's got, like, rocket launchers on his shoulders. He's got, like, killer dreads. Like, why would you not want him to turn his back on you?
I like how the killer dreads was a reason to fear him.
Yeah,
like,
think about this. A predator turns its back on you, right? And you have a big blade in your hand. You're not going to go, "Hey, predator, don't turn your back on me," because he's going to turn around and look at you. The best bet that you have is just to run up when he has his back to you and stab him.
Well, I'm going to one-up you there. I think the best bet you have is to sit there quietly and watch the predator continue to leave and then go about your merry way, play Candy Crush, do whatever you do when you're not thinking you're going to get killed by a predator.
Seriously, how did Schwarzenegger beat Predator in the first movie? He hit himself for the predator, right?
Yeah.
With the mud.
Yeah, and then he made a trap with, like, a swinging log that weighed hundreds of pounds. Like, wasn't boxing that guy.
Didn't he do all that in a day?
I mean, Schwarzenegger. It's Schwarzenegger. He could do it in a day.
There's also a scene in Predators where, oh, that terrible film where Adrian Brody speaks like this because he's a tough guy. But they run into this trap, and I swear it is the most intricate wood-cutted, logistic-wise trap I've ever seen in a film. And one guy did it. But I feel like it would have taken him a year. Wouldn't the predators on that island heard, like, chainsawing and sawing and grunting and huffing and puffing? Like, did they just let him build it? Like, I don't know. These movies are full of inconsistencies. Now, at least Lance Hendrickson went all in his attack. He risked life and limb. However, Bruce Campbell, all he had to do was learn three lines, or Ash, all Ash had to do was learn three lines in Army of Darkness, and the evil army was dead. So he makes this brave attempt. He goes through this cemetery. He fights the books, and all he has to do is say, "Klaatu, Varata." So in his attempt to save the day, he was so pompous he couldn't learn a third word. And because of that, in Army of Darkness, he raised an entire army of deadites. They steal his women, they threaten to cut out his gizzard, and they actually force him to become a leader. So that's the next one in my list. It's just him being so blowhard-y that he can't remember a third word. And because of that, he sets off a terrible chain of events.
You know, I can't remember a movie where that Bruce Campbell was in where he wasn't a blowhard. Right?
Yeah. He needs a retroactive Oscar blowhard award.
It's like ingrained in his DNA. Like, that's just who he is. That's why we love him.
Don't you feel, though, that he created more work for himself by not remembering that third word?
Yeah.
All he had to do, like, he's such an idiot. And I love that about him. And that's why he's a cult figure. But if you just remember that third word, it all could have been over.
So, wait, actually, let's backtrack. So he was trying to remember the words, and he's like, "Oh, Klaatu, Varata, Nikto," and he kept slightly getting it off, and then he rides off on the horse to that cemetery to get the book. Well, like, did he have, like, an extra hour? Could he have just turned around on the horse, gone back, asked for the words again or written them down, and then come back and set them right?
Bruce Campbell's not the kind of guy to turn back.
Like, couldn't he just? He's like, no, I'm not asking directions. Screw this. I'm going to do it now. Like, I'm going to make it work. Like, couldn't he just turn around? Like, if the consequence is that all of the Army of the Dead rise, what do you have to lose by turning around and maybe making sure you got the words right?
And you like, know what I love about, like, he's willing to go on this journey by himself into this evil cemetery. I mean, this is a brave act that he's doing. Like, he's actually going for it by himself, and he wants to save the day. But like you said, he's too much of a moron. He's too far. What's blowhard? He's too much of a blowhard to turn around and get the third word right.
It was a glorious scene, though. Wonderful scene. Everyone here should see Army of Darkness if they haven't seen Army of Darkness. And, of course, Evil Dead 2.
Now, the next one on the list is about Jack Burton and Big Trouble in Little China. And I feel like Ash and Jack Burton are blowhard brothers. Now, Jack Burton is just like a man's man. He's a truck driving. He gambles. He puts himself in harm's way. He has great reflexes. But he always lets other people fight for him because he's too busy throwing his knife out of the way. He's too busy getting himself knocked out. And the scene I have in this when he's trying to save the day is he and his fellow, allies are trying to stop this evil wedding from an evil army, from a mystic god with these badass ninjas. And he's brave enough to do it. He has this gun, but he points his gun up to the ceiling. He shoots, and a bunch of rocks fall on his head and knock him out, and he misses most of the fight.
And this is Kurt Russell for anyone who isn't solid on this movie, Big Trouble in Little China.
So he's trying to – he's doing the right thing. He's there. He wants to fight. He's just such an idiot. And he's always getting himself knocked out. So maybe that's a smart tactic.
Well, the thing there's a funny anecdote about this movie. I think it came from Russell himself. But apparently when John Carpenter and Kurt Russell were trying to shop the screenplay around Hollywood, one executive came to them and said, like, so if I'm reading this right, Kurt, you're actually the sidekick in this movie. And Carpenter and Russell look at each other, like, yeah, this guy gets it. So if you watch this movie, like, he's just like the bumbling sidekick, whereas I forget what his name was, but he's like kind of the real hero of the movie. But I just it's hilarious. Like, if you watch this movie, it's just like Kurt Russell, like, he knows like what's going on in this movie and what his role is, and he plays it like 100%. He's 100% into it, and it's awesome.
Is it me, or is that a little what the dynamic was like in the new Lone Ranger? Like, where the sidekick was really kind of the one making everything happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're saying that Johnny Depp stole from Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. John, you're on the record.
Okay.
I'm on the record. Depp, I'm calling you out. So unless you want to call into our next podcast next week, we will all assume that you stole from Kurt Russell.
I just love how Jack Burton fails up. And that is the opposite from the next people I have in the list, which are... from the other guy, Sam Jackson and The Rock meet a hard place. And they play the two cops in the beginning who are the ultimate cops, whereas Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg are the other guys. And they're probably on what? How high do you think they're at? They're on the 10th floor of a building?
That's pretty high up.
And the villains are getting away. And The Rock looks at Sam Jackson and he goes, aim for the bushes. So the two jump off the building together and just fall the longest distance. And then they, of course, die. So they're trying to save the day, but I feel like they're so good at what they do that they forgot about the laws of physics and gravity, and I actually feel like they thought they could accomplish this jump.
I have an unrelated question about The Rock. Has he ever played a douchebag in any other movie?
Because
even in The Scorpion King, he may have been a bad guy, but he wasn't a douchebag. Or not a bad guy, but, you know, he wasn't a nice guy all the time.
I don't think he has.
Like, that's the only time that he played a douche.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Scorpion King specifically. Other than that, I can't think of anything else, really.
You know, my wife made a good point last night. Megan made a good point. And we were watching Edge of Tomorrow, which is amazing. And Tom Cruise, in the beginning of that film, plays the biggest weasel. And she was like, you will never see The Rock or Jason Statham play this character. And she was right. Like, I don't know what point I'm making, but... it was nice to watch Tom Cruise play that little weasel. And I don't think The Rock is at that point in his career yet.
So we should just call him, like, the weasel when he does a... Ayo.
He's like Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Oh, so are we saying that Tom Cruise stole from Pauly Shore and Encino Man?
Is that on the record?
That's on the record.
That's on the record. Oh, Tom Cruise, you are Tom Cruise. You're welcome to call in next week and defend yourself. If you don't, we're going to presume guilt.
Send the check to Pauly Shore. Actually, this is random, but in the Army now, Pauly Shore is about to blow up that camp, and he has a rocket launcher backwards.
Yeah,
he's like, suck on this a one time. He shoots the rocket backwards. Why am I laughing so hard?
Shoot their own vehicle?
Yeah. Like, In the Army Now is a movie I don't want to watch again because I remember loving. And then that scene where David Alan Grier has that scorpion on his back, and he's like, there's a scorpion on my back. There's a scorpion on my back. And Pauly Shore's like, there's not a scorpion on your back.
Just trying to shake the crazy out of him.
No, I love that. I love In the Army Now. I'm not going to watch it again because I like it. So I'm a little worried. It's like that in Surf Ninjas. I don't ever want to watch those again.
Or Biodome. Like, you can watch that right when it came out, but any other time, you're going to hate life.
Yeah, I'm not. I think maybe, what's the one where he goes to the farm? That could maybe hold up.
Son-in-Law.
Oh, yeah,
Son-in-Law. Son-in-Law that was really funny back when we were teenagers. Wouldn't hold up now.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen was in that, right?
She had a little role. She had a little role.
Oh, okay.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she was the friend of Carla Gugino.
Oh, Carla Gugino? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was Carla Gugino.
And then the kid from The Sandlot was in there.
Yeah, the redheaded kid.
Yeah.
We should just do a Pauly Shore special podcast.
I'm down, guys. Let's transfer.
We'll call it Pauly Shore is Not Dead.
Yeah.
That title's already taken.
And speaking of Pauly Shore, that reminds me of my next film, which is Star Wars, where Han Solo.
Speaking of Pauly Shore, good segue.
Smooth.
Well, the scene where Han Solo in Star Wars chases the stormtroopers down the hall, and he's, you know, he's full of it. He's hopped up, ready to roll. His confidence is soaring. He actually thinks he can chase these stormtroopers down a hallway. But the problem is that they regroup. And then he has to run back the other way. And, like, he was just basically on this great, you know, Han was on this gravy train with biscuit wheels until the biscuit wheels got soggy and the whole thing fell apart. But I just love how he's chasing these stormtroopers. The stormtroopers have time to regroup. And then the next shot you see is Han running away from them. It's just the best. I love it. It shows that he's a kamikaze. He doesn't think things through. He tries to save the day, but it blew up in his face. I think it's just a great kind of blowhard moment where he thinks he's winning and he gets the tides turned on him quickly.
I think it's one of the best kind of representation, I think a couple minutes before that happened, he actually bust out a great line, so he was like, did we just lead this party? It's just like, this is like Han Solo at his best. Like, he's just like cocky and arrogant. Like, he doesn't really care. It's just like, it's awesome. And I love the fact that like a couple years later, Harrison Ford would actually kind of recreate this gag in, Temple of Doom, towards the end of the movie, where he's chasing one of the guys, one of the cult members, but then like he comes running back and they're all chasing him.
because at first he was just chasing one guy.
Yeah.
All right, so now I got to edit that and add this scene in there. I'm thinking the producer was like, hey, it worked in Star Wars. Let's put it in Indy.
Yeah.
Here's how it's going to go. He's going to be chasing the one guy. The guy's going to find the other guys. The guys are going to come back. They're going to be chasing him.
It's that classic great gag where, hey, I'm chasing one guy, but then I run around the corner. Whoa, it's 10 guys. I better run.
Classic Bazinga.
And then next...
I have to say it. So this next movie that this is from is one of Mark's favorite movies, I think, ever.
Yes.
Overall, because he has put this movie somehow, he has injected it into, I want to say, 5 or 6 or 7 differently themed articles. And so it's Ernest Scared Stupid. Mark, please wax poetic about Ernst P. Worrell.
Now, I'm going to pat my back here a little bit. I recently just read Jim Varney's autobiography, which was written by, not autobiography, but his biography, which is written by his nephew. And then I also read The Story of All the Ernest Films by director John Cherry. I also have talked to Matt Zoller Seitz, who writes all the Wes Anderson books about Wes Anderson, and a New York Times cartoonist who writes political cartoons. He and I have waxed poetic about the Ernest films. So I'm slowly building an audience for this film. And this moment is Ernest and the troll are finally meeting head to head. Ernest is kind of full of bluster. He thinks he has the troll done. It's over. And Ernest pulls out this jar. Oh, so Ernest is reading this book and said the only way to stop this troll is by a mother's M-I-blank-K. So he
doesn't, it was scratched off or something, yeah, right?
So he doesn't put it together that it's milk. So he goes out and finds pure Bulgarian miyak. And he gets the troll cornered and he goes, I bet you didn't find it this time of year. Bet I was a little too light on my feet, but I got it. Some pure Bulgarian miyak. And then the troll looks at him and goes, miyak? Question mark. And then Ernest kind of looks confused. Ernest looks at it and goes, yeah, miyak. And so they're both doubting each other. And then the miyak works out terribly and he gets a hurricane of bad breath and he gets blown away and finds out that milk kills the troll. But it's just a funny, like, he thinks he has it. He thinks he saved the day, but he gets pure, like, I think it's more impressive that he found pure Bulgarian miyak in a small town on a moment's notice.
So now I have to, we've actually had a lot of conversations about this movie and never did it occur to me to ask or myself to do this. Have you looked up miyak? Is that a thing?
I have not looked it up. I think it's one of those I want to believe it exists.
You want to believe it exists.
Yeah.
And that it's some kind of fluid.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what miyak is. I mean, I don't know. I guess we could Google it. Hey, John, can you Google it real quick? Lazarvath?
I'm Googling it right now, and the Uh-oh. First results are the movie. So.
Oh, okay.
It's not really looking good.
We'll just have to do a full report next week. So whatever time that isn't absorbed with Tom Cruise calling in... you know, to defend himself and so, you know, then we'll take some time and discuss miyak.
Pauly Shore needs his money.
There's actually a Facebook page for authentic Bulgarian miyak. So
see, people love this movie, guys. I'm telling you, there's an audience for this film. People still love it, and this is one of my favorite hero moments that goes terribly wrong. Now the next one, I think John Levingood and I, we did a post where we did what the best worst movie monster, best monster movies, and this film wins every time. And this film is Deep Blue Sea.
God, great movie.
Now there's a moment where the sharks are hurting the staff of the, I don't know what it's called, the Aquarius or the Olympus or the Dairy Queen. They're sinking it and they're hurting them into this area. And there's infighting. They're all freaking out. And Sam Jackson steps up and he makes this incredible speech and he's orating. He's just lighting the world on fire with these words. But then a terrible CGI shark comes out of nowhere, eats him and takes him away. So the biggest star of this film gets eaten halfway through the film. Now, and a lot
wasn't
of people
just being eaten. That thing worried him like a pit bull with a chew toy.
Yeah, he got chomped. I think that's the technical term, right? Chomped and shook. But see, the thing is, a lot of people haven't mentioned this, and I picked up on this. Now, he and his hubris to save the day and make a great speech, he somehow forgot that he was standing next to shark-infested waters where intelligent sharks roamed pretty close to him. So he didn't even think about that. He was just too worried about making a great speech. So his speech and his trying to save the day actually got him killed.
You know, I haven't seen this movie in a while, but I feel like he was pointing at the water while he was talking and maybe even taking a step closer.
Yeah.
Like during the speech, like right over there, those sharks just getting that 18 inches closer that it took for that shark to reach him.
And I bet that shark was just waiting for him to finish the speech because they're so smart.
It was a good speech. They'd want to hear the whole speech.
They're sitting there like maybe when I rally my shark armies in the future.
I personally I want to believe that it was a group of them and they were all just waiting for him to hear what Samuel L. Jackson's plan was. But then you have Lenny, who's always so impatient. He's like, oh, can we eat him now? He was like, no, we gotta see what he's got planned. He's like, all right. And then 2 minutes later, chomp, Lenny.
You're right because I think just when he gets killed, isn't he so what we're going to do is, and then the shark eats him. And they're like, damn it, Lenny. Why? Every time, Lenny.
It was a good speech. I mean, listening to Samuel L. Jackson talk loud about things is kind of like listening to Morgan Freeman narrate things. Like, you just sit back. You just want to take it all in. That's why those sharks waited. It's like speech giving skill, expert. Speech giving location choosing skill, rookie. Rookie. Just terrible.
And you're right. He was pointing at the water and moving closer to it.
Yeah, I feel like when he was pointing aggressively with each syllable, he's saying, "And we're not gonna take it anymore." And then he just gets eaten.
And then, like, you don't see in a lot of these movies, like when William Wallace is making his speech in Braveheart, he's not doing it within arrow range of the other army. Like, he's doing it within distance. He's staying moving on his horse. He's not a moving, you know, he's not a stationary target. He does a good job making that speech because he doesn't stand still. Sam Jackson sort of borrowed from William Wallace.
Very much so.
Now, the next one is, there's a post I want to write eventually about the blowhards of cinema. And I feel like this guy, which this film is becoming a cult classic, and the film is MacGruber. But I feel like this is one of my favorite scenes. Now, in MacGruber, he goes around, he recruits his former team of actually WWE wrestlers. And they're going to save the day. But the problem is they're all loaded in a van with 75 pounds of his homemade C4, in which he lets us know that it's very unstable. And then, so before he can save the day, the van blows up with his entire team. And he runs towards the fire going, "No, no, 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 no." And it's just, you think, you spend 5 minutes recruiting a team. They're all ready to go. You think there's about to be a big battle. And then MacGruber leaves his C4 in the truck and they all blow up.
I just want to say, like, MacGruber as a movie, it holds the distinction of being the worst movie that I've ever laughed the most at. Like, in general, the movie was terrible, but the jokes, when they actually work, just made me laugh so hard. I don't know, it's just a weird dichotomy. I'm just like, I hate this movie, but I'm just laughing so hard at it. Like, I don't know.
He shoves a piece of celery in his butt as a distraction, and it's gross, but he's like, it worked.
The sex scene with Kristen Wiig, like, that was awkward, but it's also really hilarious.
No. Him and Ryan Felipe both doing the celery thing, or when he gets Ryan Felipe to do it, that's just about all I remember of that entire movie. And I saw it sober, and I stayed awake the whole time. And I that's never happened where I remember basically nothing of a movie. My brain has repressed all scenes of that movie except for Ryan Felipe with celery in his butt.
I don't know. You don't remember the running gag, like, where he remembers, like, the guy cuts him off, like, his license plate number?
No, I don't. I'm serious. It's like it's been erased.
Now, hey, John, on this, can I play YouTube clips? Can they hear it if I play this clip real quick from MacGruber?
Try it.
There's just a scene I love. I want to see if you guys can hear it.
If it doesn't come in clearly, we just edit it later. So,
can you hear it?
No.
No.
No, you can't?
Yeah.
No. Never mind. But there's a scene where he meets Jericho and Chris Jericho. Go on YouTube. It's classic MacGruber where he's talking to Chris Jericho, and it's a really funny exchange that was it was improvised on set.
Oh, wait. Maybe I can do it over here on this end. Let's see how it sounds.
Classic MacGruber, and it's like 56 seconds long. MacGruber, classic MacGruber. There we go.
Same old Frank. Always wants to go it alone.
MacGruber. I thought you were dead.
Last time I saw you, you had a grenade launcher in one hand and an M16 in the other.
And you had just ripped a dude's throat out with your bare hands.
Classic MacGruber. So, looks like you're keeping your bod pretty tight.
You're looking pretty good yourself.
Well, every day's a workout when you gotta carry around a 20-pound python in your jeans.
You and your dick comments.
It's fun to say them.
It's fun to hear them.
That's why I say them.
And that's why I listen. We had some good times together, didn't we?
We had some great times.
It's fun to say them. We're about to have and that's why I listen.
Wow.
I know that look.
I need you, Frank. Serious.
I just love that, though. And that's why I listen. I love that. See, and he improvised that on set, and he was really worried about getting fired, but everyone loved it. So that whole exchange, the last four or five sentences were all improvised.
I don't know. For those of you folks listening at home, if you can, just try to find like a YouTube montage of all the funniest gags from this movie. I don't really recommend watching the movie, but it's also really funny. So just try to find like all the jokes on YouTube.
It's one of those movies that's funnier after you've watched it.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. After,
you know what I mean? You start thinking about it. Like the first time I watched Hot Tub Time Machine, I didn't really like it. But then I started thinking about it, and I watched it countless times. I think it's hilarious now. So, I don't know. It's one of those movies that you just need to slog through to
appreciate.
Actually,
yeah. You know what? You convinced me, Mark. Just actually go out and watch it. Watch the whole movie. You'll probably hate me afterwards. But once you start thinking about it, you'll probably still hate me. But then you'll start to find a movie, you know, really funny, hopefully.
Now, John, when you do your leg day, do you find joy in that? Or are you like, oh, this is tough?
I kind of think of it as one of those things where inside it's hurting. But there are parts of it that I really like, you know, like when you ask someone to spot you and you're basically just saying, could you come over here really close and see how awesome I am at this? And so, whatever.
Classic MacGruber. Classic MacGruber.
Classic MacGruber.
Yeah. All right, so John, basically what you're telling me is that doing legs is a slog, but when you're done with it, you really feel great about it. Yes, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, but it hurts like my legs got cut up, like my legs got cut up in a hostel movie the next couple days.
Ouch.
Yeah, so, but... No, so that's my list, and I had a fun time writing it. It was just a good time, like, you know, because so many movies are, there's the hero moments, they talk about the great things, but not, we don't talk too many times about when the heroes just fall on their butts. So I had a lot of fun writing this post.
I can't believe you just basically compared MacGruber to a squat, basically. That's kind of weird.
They were working out in this scene, you know?
To one of my squats, to be clear. I mean,
right.
Much different.
All right, guys, I think we're at that time in the podcast where we have to say goodbye, unfortunately.
So what did we learn on the – I want to do one thing. What did we learn on the show tonight, guys? One thought from each of us. What did we learn?
Evidently that MEAC is a thing because it has a Facebook page.
Yeah, I sent you guys an invite to like it, so you're welcome.
Oh, good.
I learned that a drive-by through one of those sex shops is more informative than watching the film.
Definitely is.
So if you live in St. Petersburg, you're an expert.
Oh,
that's right. Whenever you're driving into St. Pete Beach,
66th Street, driving down that. That's
right. I can't argue with that. What did I learn? I learned that basically MacGruber was actually funnier than I gave it credit for.
Never eat MacGruber's celery.
Oh. All right, guys.
Now, guys. Oh, wait. Next week, something to think about. I was just thinking about this the other day, so I haven't really fleshed it out yet. But I feel like the trait of a good movie is afterwards you remember the characters' names.
Yeah, that's usually a sign that you enjoyed the movie when you're actually paying attention.
But you know how many movies you watch where you can't name any of the characters, but you can name, you know, John McClane.
Right. Yeah, okay, I've definitely seen my share of movies where I just
wasn't paying
attention.
I have to identify with this. I shit you not. When I left that movie and I started writing the review for 50 Shades of Grey, I had to go to IMDb to get the first or last name of the girl and to get the first name of Christian Grey. I couldn't remember Christian or Anastasia Steele. I couldn't remember any of it.
Because I was thinking about Grand Budapest Hotel, and I like Grand Budapest Hotel, but I don't remember any of the characters' names. But then I think about Rushmore, and there's Herman Bloom and Max Fisher. So I wonder if that's, I don't know, you leave a movie, Ripley, you talk about that. I don't know. I feel like a good movie is when you remember the character's name. So let's talk about that. And we'll argue with Tom Cruise next time.
Nice.
And Johnny Depp, if he wishes to call.
Oh, actually, yeah, that's what I learned. Apparently Tom Cruise and Johnny Depp are both thieves.
And that's on the record.
Right. Those no talent hacks.
We can't come back from this.
All right, guys. If you want to read Lemon Good's review of 50 Shades of Grey, check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. If you also want to read Mark's article on the when saving a day goes wrong, it's also up on the website at moviesfilmsandflicks.com. That's andflicks.com. It's not moviesfilmsflicks.com. Right, Mark?
I'm never going to be able to live that down.
All right, guys. I've been your host, John Losovov. For my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer and
peace.
John Lemongood.
Love. Bye,
MacGruber.
We'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.